It's easy for podcasts like this one to get more and more advanced as each episode builds on the previous episodes. So every once in a while, I like to take a step back and get back to the basics. That's right. It's time for another Book Marketing 101 episode. Many marketing classes start right off with the four P's of marketing, or what's sometimes called McCarthy's marketing mix. And if you're curious why something is not selling, the four P's have the answer. And if you want something to sell like crazy, the four P's have the answer to that too. The four P's are product, price, place, and promotion. This is really the core of the first month of any good marketing class. And when I first started working on this episode, my plan was to do an episode that was an update to our 2015 episode on the five P's of marketing. Yes, Seth Godin added a fifth P, which is purple cow, to the marketing mix about a decade ago. But the more I got into it, the longer the episode became. So today we're going to focus on the first P of McCarthy's marketing mix, product. Get this wrong and your book won't sell, regardless of what you do. Get this right and everything gets easier. If marketing your book feels like an exhausting slog, this episode just might change your life. You're listening to Novel Marketing, the longest running book marketing podcast in the world. I'm Thomas Umstead Jr., and this is the show for writers who want to build their platform, sell more books, and make a living writing books worth talking about. And speaking of books worth talking about, as an author, your primary product is your book. Now, if you're a public speaker, your primary product might be your speeches, and you sell your book on the side. Or if you're a podcaster, your primary product may be the podcast. And it's not uncommon for authors to have multiple products. We'll talk about that in a second. But for most authors, most of the time, your primary product is your book. And that's what I'm going to focus on today. So of the five P's of marketing, product is the most important. Why? Because, as David Ogilvy says, good marketing helps a bad product fail faster. The problem with this quote, when it comes to being useful, is that every author thinks their book is good. You think your book is good. Even if all the other authors are wrong, you're the special exception. So the question is not, is this book good? Because obviously we all love our books and they're all good to us. The question really should be, is this the kind of book people want to buy and want to read? Sometimes a book can be so good it can overcome bad marketing to spread by word of mouth alone. But no amount of marketing can save a bad book. So here is the $1 million question. What makes a book a good book? It's not what you think, so let's break it down. There are a lot of wrong answers to this question, and these wrong answers lead authors to poverty and obscurity. So those wrong answers include your publisher, your mom, your agent, your editor, your friends, your English teacher, critics, doesn't matter, writing award voters, doesn't matter, bookstore owners, doesn't matter. Writers' contests, doesn't matter. Future generations, yes, we'd love them to like our book, but it still doesn't matter. So who determines the quality? Who matters? Wait for it. It is the reader. If you want your book to sell, this is the only answer that matters. But not all readers are the same. So the key to writing a good book is identifying who your reader is. Once you know who you're trying to thrill, you can write the book to thrill them. For a product to be good, it needs to be good according to the customer. This is fundamental marketing 101. For a book to be good, it is the reader's opinion that matters, not the author's or any of those other people that I mentioned. So a common mistake beginning authors make is that they write the book either for everyone, which doesn't exist because there's no such thing as everyone. There's only specific people who are all very different from each other, or they write the book for themselves. And the challenge with writing a book for yourself is that you are not much of a market and you can't buy the book from yourself because you already have all of your own money. Writing a book can be a great way to work through trauma, but that kind of book isn't ready for the market. That's the kind of book for therapy, not for sales. Another challenge that's a little less common, but I see it all too often, is for established authors to fall out of love with their fans or get tired of their genre. In fact, some authors even start to despise the fans that they have, and they want the greener grass of the fans that some other author has. And betraying your fans or pivoting to a different style of writing typically doesn't work, and it can turn your fans into jilted lovers who then hate you with a passionate, burning hatred. This is a lesson that Hollywood is learning the hard way. And when Hollywood does this, it turns into an expensive flop. Don't covet your neighbor's fans and dance with a person who brought you to the dance. If you want to make a Star Wars movie for people who don't like Star Wars, just make the movie and don't call it a Star Wars movie. If you want to write a totally different book for a totally different audience, it's a free country. You can do that. But my recommendation as a marketing person would be to do it under a pen name, so that you're not confusing your readers and confusing your brand. Now, there's a lot to say about writing for your reader, and I want to give you a good place to start because I have a bunch of episodes on this. But the place to start is with one real life person. I call this person Timothy. Your real life person will probably be called something else. And if you can thrill this one person, you can thrill the many. If you can't find one person to love your book for its own sake, instead of for your sake, because they love you, your book is doomed. If you can't find one, you can't find two. And if you can't find two, you can't find a million. Writing for a Timothy gets you out of your own head and starts you on the path of writing for an audience. And ideally, you want your Timothy to be someone who's willing to be a beta reader for you and who will talk to you about your book and what they like and what they don't like. And I have some episodes to help you with this. I'll have them linked in the show notes. The first one is How to Find Your Timothy. Second one is How to Write to Market with Chris Fox. And the third is How to Use Marketing Data to Sell More Books. An example of this from the music industry. Right now, we're in historic times for music. There's a man who sings under the name Oliver Anthony, and he was a heavy equipment salesperson. So he spent years interacting with the kind of men who wore hard hats and worked outside, the kind of men who felt like this country keeps kicking them down. And he wrote a song for those men. He was one of them, but he wrote a song for the men that he was interacting with. And this song shot to the number one on the Billboard's Hot 100. It's number one on iTunes. It is a global smash hit. This is the first time ever in the history of the Billboard charts for someone to shoot straight to number one on their very first week with no charting history. And what's crazy is he did this completely independently. In fact, several of his other songs are also in the Billboard Hot 100, and those songs were recorded on his iPhone. This is like unbelievably successful, despite what's arguably pretty low recording quality. You can hear the crickets in the background as he's recording his music outside. And I would say that his success is not despite the fact that he's independent. It's because he's independent. The gatekeepers in the music industry don't care about men who wear hard hats. They're offended by his lyrics. They call his lyrics controversial. But it doesn't matter what they think. It only matters what his listeners think. And if you interact with someone who's a fan of Oliver Anthony, they're probably playing his song on repeat. I know people who've been listening to nothing but Oliver Anthony since his songs came out last week. And an interesting thing about Anthony is that he spends time to meet each person who comes to his concerts, which are outside in the middle of the day in triple-digit heat, right? Who would come to an outdoor concert in the middle of August in the South? The kind of people who are already working outside in that kind of heat every day. He knows who his target audience is, and he's not trying to thrill everyone, but by thrilling a specific kind of person, he is now the number one musician in the world, beating people like Taylor Swift with millions of dollars of marketing and billion-dollar companies behind her. Who has the higher-ranking song? Oliver Anthony. So getting to know who you're writing for is critical, but it's not enough, which leads us to quality. Every professional chef needs to learn how to chop quickly and how to keep their workspace clean. This is true regardless of what kind of cuisine they're cooking. And in the same way, every author needs to master certain fundamentals, regardless of the genre that they're writing. And while different readers look for different things in a book, there are some things that most, if not all, readers are looking for, and you'll need to master these. So readers want to read books by authors who are proficient at the craft of writing. So this means, at the very least, complying with the rules of English grammar, correct usage and punctuation, correct spelling, and clarity. And for fiction, it also means things like a compelling plot, relatable characters, good scenes, a good point of view, good dialogue, and good management of tension. It doesn't mean the tension has to be high, but the tension needs to be appropriate for the genre. And I have a lot of episodes about these craft elements, how to do good plot, how to do good characters, how to manage point of view. I'll have links to them in my show notes for this episode. Many of them are on my other podcast, which is more craft focused. That's the Christian Publishing Show. But you don't have to be writing a Christian book to learn how to create compelling characters. And I encourage you to, if you're writing fiction, you really need to study craft. And if you're wanting help leveling up your craft, we do have a course on this. It's the 5-year plan for becoming a best-selling author. And in this course, you'll be reading a book on craft almost every month and then doing writing assignments where you apply what you're reading about. And it's a very quick way up the learning curve. And you may be like, 5 years, that sounds like a lot of time. And believe it or not, that's actually faster than it takes most authors to get good. So most authors wander in the wilderness for 5 years before they even start the process of improving their craft. And it takes them a total of 10 years to really become the kind of author that is able to sell thousands or tens of thousands of books. And this course compresses that craft learning process to 5 years. And it's one of our most popular courses, and our authors going through it are really excited about how quickly they're getting better at writing. But product isn't just about how good the book is initially. There's another element of product called the product life cycle. So for everything, there is a season, and nothing stays popular forever. Oliver Anthony's song, Richmond, North of Richmond, won't always be number one on the Billboard charts. And this is particularly true for fiction. People are willing to pay a premium for the book that their friends are reading at the same time. But over time, demand declines and used books flood the market, driving demand down for the new copies. A short trip to your discount bookstore will show you a shelf after shelf of $1 books that are only a few years old. And to give you an idea, here are the top 10 books from the New York Times bestseller list from June 5th, 2016. And as I read these, I want you to ask yourself, how many of these do I even recognize or remember? So here are the books. The Fireman, 15th Affair, The Weekenders, The Last Mile, The Nest, Beyond the Ice Limit, Everybody's Fool, Extreme Prey, The Highwayman, and All the Light We Cannot See. I imagine you recognize some of those books, but fewer than you probably would have expected. And this list is just from 2016. That's not that long ago. The number one book on that list currently, and I just checked, has books for sale on Amazon for just $5.50 used. And that's cheaper than both the ebook and the paperback new. And so this author who wrote this book is fighting against a headwind for this incredibly popular book. 10,000 reviews. A lot of people bought this book. And yet they're competing with themselves. The life cycle for this book is coming to an end. I once read that Brandon Sanderson often sells more copies during the pre-order window than he does during all of the days after publication combined. So on launch day and before, he gets the majority of his total sales. His loyal fans want to eat the cookies while they're hot out of the oven. I will say, I know a friend who dedicates a vacation day every year to the release of each of Sanderson's Stormlight books. So he'll take a day off of work to read it as soon as it comes out. And while Sanderson is an extreme case because of the nature of his fans, most books do most of their sales during the first 60 days. And this is why having a book launch is so important and why understanding a book's life cycle is so important. One of the things that makes marketing exhausting for authors is that they've got a book that's 6 months old or a year old and they're still trying to get it to take off when they lost their opportunity for it to be a hot new book. And I will say, books are not the only form of entertainment with a life cycle. Movies, video games, TV, and music also have life cycles, and often shorter life cycles. Books actually have a long life cycle compared to music. You know, the kids are not jamming out to What Does a Fox Say like they used to. And I don't know anyone who's still living La Vida Loca. So, from a product perspective, one of the best things that you can do to boost your sales is to write a new book. Readers love the new, and the promotion of the new book can rejuvenate interest in your previous books. And this is what the professionals do. So I'm going to read you that same list of books, but now I'm going to read you the authors of those above books. And I want you to see how many of these author names you recognize. Joe Hill, James Patterson, Mary Kate Andrews, David Balducci, Cynthia Diaprick Sweeney, Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child, Richard Russo, John Sandiford, Craig Johnson, and Anthony Dwar. My guess is you recognize more of the names from the second list than you did of the first list. Why? Because those authors kept writing new books. They kept their name top of mind for readers like you. When you release your fifth book, you tend to see a jump in sales for your previous four books. And this is why it's so critical to keep writing, to put that last book aside and write and promote the next book and keep launching new books to rejuvenate the sales of your old books. For more on product lifecycle, I have an entire episode just on this one aspect of product. The name of that episode is The Life Cycle of a Book, How to Extend Your Book's Life with Effective Marketing. Another element of product is product mix. I alluded to this earlier, but you can have more than one product and more than one kind of product. The key to success with your product mix is that you want complementary products. A restaurant that wants to sell drinks might also sell salty food, right? Because they complement each other. The more salty food you eat, the more you want to drink something. In fiction, the best way to do this is to write a series of books, right? Book number one helps sell book number two, and book number two helps sell book number one. But there's more to a product book mix than just different kinds of books. You can also expand outside of books to other kinds of products, many of which I have episodes on. So I'm going to share a list with you of other kinds of products. And most of these, I have a link either to an episode about that thing or to a whole category of episodes about that thing. So products that you could mix into your product mix in addition to your book include public speaking, a blog, a podcast, an email newsletter, a radio show, online courses, live events, webinars, virtual summits, a Substack short story subscription where people pay to get a new short story every month, merchandise, or a short story anthology. And the key to success here is to find the right mix for you and for your writing. For some authors, the best mix is nothing but books. Books, books, books. You write books and that's all you do. But for other authors, they find that if they add a podcast to the mix or perhaps do a short story subscription, they can make a lot more money and have a deeper relationship, a more meaningful relationship with their readers. Another aspect of a product is the product design. This includes obvious things like the cover and back cover, but it also includes less obvious things like formatting, layout, and typography. A big part of the success behind the Dummies books is design, right? Each Dummies book follows the same formatting guidelines. Each book features the icons and breaks down the topics in a very scannable table of contents. And each book features comics and a part of tens section in the back. The Dummies books also have brilliant cover design. They may be ugly, but they work. That bright yellow jumps right off the shelf, and the consistent branding connects books across multiple genres. You'll find Dummies books throughout the bookstore, and they sell surprisingly well. When I was a kid, I learned everything I needed to know about computers from Dummies books. I had a whole collection in middle school. I had Networking for Dummies, which helped me set up my first local area network. I had Web Design for Dummies, which helped me design my first website as a 13-year-old. And every time my mom took me to the bookstore, I would come home with yet another Dummies books and often yet another Star Wars book. And yes, I was that kind of nerd. And it's important to note that Web Design for Dummies was not necessarily the best book on web design. I had other books on web design that were better written or were by authors who had more specific expertise. But Web Design for Dummies was the best designed book. And because it had that good design, that increased the quality for me. If I needed to look something up, I could do it faster in the Dummies books than I could in one of the other books I owned on the same topic. And because of that good product design, it made it more appealing to me as a reader. So think about your book and ask yourself the question, how can I design my book to be more appealing to readers? We have an entire category of episodes on product design. So here's a list of some of those episodes, and I'll have links to all of these in the show notes. Effective book cover design, how to pick a strong book title, how to create a design brief for your book cover, how to use your book's back matter to sell more books, how to write best-selling back cover copy, and more. And again, I'll have links to all of those episodes in the show notes. Design really makes a difference. And this is one of the things that a lot of authors overlook. Everybody knows they need a good book cover, but they don't often think of typography or typesetting as a way of getting a competitive advantage. And once you see the table of contents as a marketing tool, your eyes are opened to a way for you to get a lot more sales and make your book useful for more readers. Another element of good product design is your answer to the question, does the book deliver on its promise? Each book makes a promise. It does this through its title, subtitle, genre, category, cover, and promotion. And the better the promise overlaps with the desires that the reader already has, the easier the book is to sell. A Dummies book, for example, makes the promise, this complicated topic will be made so easy to understand that even a dummy could do it. Now, that promise probably won't work for you. I will say the most common promise that a book makes that does work, that will work for you, is this book will be similar to this other book you already like. And that's a very easy promise to make. And that similar book could be the last book you wrote, if your last book was very popular, or it could be a popular book in your genre. Most books coast on the success of the number one book in their genre. The number one book is like the first bird in the line of geese, and all the other books in the genre are coasting off of that wind. The most popular book is the book bringing new readers into the genre. They enjoyed that book so much, they want other books like it, and that's where all of the other authors get to benefit. And making the right promise is a key part of your product. And if you make the wrong promise, readers won't even give your book a try. And it doesn't matter if you deliver because they weren't interested in what you're offering. And this is where your sales pitch comes in. So when I say making a good promise, this is your sales pitch. And this is where product starts to connect with promotion, which is another P that we'll talk about in another episode. But the second part of making a good promise is delivering on that promise. A Dummies book that is hard to understand violates the promise that it's making, and it undermines all of the other Dummies books. This not only causes negative reviews, but it can undermine the brand altogether. So let's talk a little bit about brand, because your brand is connected with your product. As you consistently deliver on your promises, you develop a brand. Brand is just a fancy marketing way of capturing the concept of reputation. And you have a good reputation by doing good things, by making good promises and delivering on those promises. And you have a bad reputation by doing bad things. We have a lot of episodes on brand. I won't go into it too much here, but I do want to share the lesson of CNN and Bud Light, because they both made the same mistake going in opposite directions. So CNN fell out of love with their fans, and they wanted to bring on more conservatives to watch their channel. And as a result, their ratings are down 20 to 60% because the conservatives don't want CNN, and the progressive viewers who did watch CNN before are now turned off and have switched to MSNBC, which is very clear that it is for progressives. Bud Light made the exact same mistake, but going the other way politically. Its customer base was conservative, and they fell out of love with the conservatives who were buying their beer, and they wanted progressives instead. So they made a hard tack to the left with their marketing, and as a result, their sales are down 30 to 40% as the conservatives that they shunned have moved on. So I'm going to say this again. Dance with the reader who brought you. You're writing for a specific person. You need to keep that specific person happy with your books. Making that person mad at you isn't going to make people who don't like you like you. If they don't like you, you can't make them like you. So don't try. Be true to your readers and be true to your brand. This is the path to success. The easiest way to keep a consistent brand is to stay in one genre. The authors who wander between genres often fail to attract readers. And it's okay to write in a lot of genres before you get published as you're trying to find your voice and trying to find where you fit. But once you start to have some success, readers are going to want more of the same from you. So be careful what genre you pick and ask yourself, is this a place I'm willing to stay for the foreseeable future? The bottom line for the first P in McCarthy's marketing mix is to write the book that people already want to read. Marketing is not magic. You can't use marketing to change people into the kind of people who like what you wrote. But you can write something that people already want, and then you use marketing to help them realize that this is the thing they've always wanted. Authors contact me all the time with some version of this message. I wrote a book, and now I want help marketing it. I want help getting people to like it. And I know that the book sales for this book are doomed to be low because the author baked a cookie with no sugar, and now they're wanting me to sprinkle some marketing sugar on top. If you want people to like your cookie, the sugar needs to be part of the recipe. If you want to sprinkle some extra sugar on top, it helps, but only if there's sugar in the cookie already. The marketing needs to be written into the book. The time to start thinking about who is going to read your book is the entire time you're writing the book. A lot of authors don't start thinking about the reader until they've already written the end. And for these authors, they fail to find an audience. So here is the key to success. Write a book for your readers rather than trying to find readers for your book. This shift, which is a hard shift. Almost no authors do this with the first book, which is part of the reason why it's so important to not publish your first book first, is that once you find your readers and you're writing a book for those readers, everything gets easier and you're selling way more copies of your book at way less effort. It's not exhausting anymore. It's not as expensive anymore because the people want what you have. Oliver Anthony didn't need a big $1 million marketing campaign for his song because he was giving people what they were desperate for. People were like, yes, finally, a song that sings to the music that's already in my heart. And if you can write a book that's in tune with the music already in the hearts of your readers, they will not just buy your book, but they will become advocates for your book and your sales will skyrocket. And this is the power of product. And it's just the first of the five P's of effective marketing. If you're wanting more help with this, I have a course that will take you through the entire process of marketing your book. It's not just the cookbook with recipes for success, but it's also the pantry of ingredients. It will help you pick an approach that will work for you, that plays to your strengths and avoids your weaknesses. And it will then give you the ingredients that you need to implement that strategy that plays to your strengths. You won't need to do everything in the course, but everything you need will be in this course. So what's the name of the course? It's Obscure No More. So if you're feeling obscure, if you're feeling like you haven't yet found your audience or you haven't yet found a way to get your book in front of the people who are desperate to read it, you should check out Obscure No More. Obscure No More will help you develop a brand that fits you and resonates with your readers. It will help you grow an email list of subscribers ready and excited to buy your book. It will help you spend less time marketing by playing to your strengths and avoiding time-wasting marketing myths. It will help you craft blog posts readers will want to share with their friends and family. It will help you build an author website that ranks high on Google and sells your books. It will help you start a podcast that builds a connection with your readers. It will help you go on a media tour of radio, TV, and podcasts. And it will help you speak from the stage and a whole lot more. This is the biggest, most comprehensive course I've ever made. And it comes not just with these pre-recorded trainings on all the topics I just talked about and more, but it also comes with live coaching from me where I answer your questions and a 24-hour online community where you can connect not just with me, but with other authors going through Obscure No More. If you'd like to learn more, just go to obscurenomore.com. Our featured patron today is Larisha Matuska, author of The Healer's Rune. 300 years after a great war shattered the Council of Races, the warrior Rudan have all but eradicated their cousins, the fairy Arathel, and enslaved mortal humanity. In order to save her people from being wiped out by the Rudan, Sabine, a human healer, must overcome generations of bitterness, suspicion, and fear, and forge an alliance among enemy races. But what chance does she have when one of those races is extinct and her dreams of freedom threaten every remaining race on the planet? Larisha Matuska, thank you so much for being a patron of the Novel Marketing Podcast. Thank you for your support that helps keep this podcast on the air. The Novel Marketing Podcast is a production of AuthorMedia.com. The audio engineering is by William Umstadt. The blog post is crafted by Shauna Lettler. And you can find that blog post at AuthorMedia.com/384. And I am Thomas Umstadt Jr. saying thank you for listening and live long and prosper.